Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday afternoon. I'm in Phoenix, where I've been at the Suns Media Day. We're going to have a number of folks join the pod today who've been dispersed at media days around the country. But first, we're joined from Camden, Massachusetts, where the Celtics were today, Tim Bontemps.
Hello there, Brian. How are you?
You got a wild travel day. You're trying to get from Camden, Massachusetts to Charleston, South Carolina, a very typical NBA routing, right?
Very, very typical. Yes. Very typical.
Sixers.
So it's going to be I was in San Francisco. I was in San Jose until Saturday. Then I was in New York for about 4 hours. Then I came to Boston. Now I'm in Boston for a day, and then I'm going to Charleston for the week. So
that's where the Sixers are. You're not going on vacation, just to be clear. That's where the Sixers.
The Sixers are having training camp in Charleston, South Carolina, which was going to be an interesting thing and has been replaced by a few other interesting things as the top item of discussion.
Yeah, you and me were on those interesting things today. Let's start with what happened in Boston. Obviously, the Ime Udoka situation is on everyone's mind there. Tell me what your takeaways were from what the Celtics players and coaches were talking about today.
I mean, the thing that really stood out to me, Brian, was that the Celtics players are in as much of the dark about this as everybody else. And I didn't really know what to think of that. I guess it didn't occur to me to think about how much the players might have known or not known, but several of them said they learned about it on social media when our colleague Adrian Wojnarowski first broke the news that Ime Udoka was potentially going to be suspended for a violation of team rules last week. They said they met with the front office, and I assume, you know, they didn't say directly. I would assume it was Brad Stevens and ownership on Thursday, and didn't really get much more than was in the statement that the team put out. And even today, a lot of them are seemingly as much in the dark as everybody else. And, you know, I thought it was noteworthy that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown both said they haven't spoke to Ime Udoka since this all went down. Joe Mazzulla, the interim coach, indicated, didn't exactly clearly say it, but indicated he had spoken to Ime Udoka since then. And it was understandably a organization that is trying to come to grips with what has been a pretty chaotic 4 or 5 days, and certainly is not what any of them expected when this news broke. Remember, this broke late on a Wednesday night here on the East Coast. And Marcus Smart said Ime Udoka had been out to L.A., had met with the players. Like, they were all thinking things were going to just go into the season as normal. And then, you know, 4 days before training camp, their entire team gets thrown up in the air and all this happens. So that was really what stood out to me, was just the entire group trying to still come to grips with what's happened and then process it and try to move forward into what is one of the most anticipated seasons in the NBA this year. These guys are projected to be an NBA Finals contender to win a potential championship. And now they're doing it with, you know, an interim head coach who's the youngest coach in the league. And, you know, their starting center had surgery. We'll get to that. I mean, there's just chaos all around this team right now.
Okay. So one of the things that came out in, one of the things that came out in Wick Grusbach, the team's principal owner, his press conference that he had with Brad Stevens last week, he said that this investigation was several months long. I think he said had been going on for
several.
Months,
I think several weeks. I think is more a proper terminology.
I think he said several months.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure. But it wasn't short.
Regardless, it was going on for a while. It didn't start last week.
Right.
And it seemed like the players didn't know about it. It seemed like it was kept very quiet within the organization, which I think that's probably a good thing, because you want to have an investigation done like that, but it creates this sudden change. I mean, you call him an interim head coach. An interim head coach that starts on day one of training camp, that's kind of that kind of is a contradiction in terms.
Yep.
But a coach who, I don't know if he had a chance to even prepare for this concept. How did Joe Mazzulla, I don't even know what his voice sounds like. So, I'm going to have to learn. I know what he looks like, but I'm going to have to learn what his voice, it's crazy. You know, his situation, he's well respected within the Celtics organization. He started working there 7 or so years ago for their G League team.
Let me give a real quick breakdown because it's a little complicated. So Joe Mazzulla played at West Virginia, was part of the Bob Huggins team, got recruited there by John Beilein. He then spent 5 years working for Division II colleges in West Virginia, a couple different schools. He gets hired by the Celtics.
Where he was the head coach?
Well, he was later. So he was an assistant for 4 or 5 years at 2 different schools, one of them being Fairmont State, which he returned to. Then he went to the G League, worked for the Maine Red Claws, Boston's G League team in 2016-17. He then goes back to Fairmont State, where he's hired as the head coach. He was the head coach there for 2 years. And then in 2019, Brad Stevens hires him to be an assistant coach with the Celtics. So he has been with the Celtics for the past 3 years. He was with them for a year before that. So he's not a guy that's unfamiliar to the guys here. But yeah, I mean, look, this is a guy who was coaching in a small town in West Virginia 3 years ago and is now coaching a team that a month ago was the favorite to win the championship. I mean, it's a pretty stunning turn of events all the way around.
He's never coached a game on the bench in the NBA. He's always been behind the bench. That's unheard of. He did coach, as you mentioned, in Division II, and he also was their summer league coach.
Yep. He also coached summer league. Now, he's a guy that has had, as you said, has had a lot of respect around the league. The Celtics made a point of keeping him on the staff last year. Ime Udoka essentially hired a brand new staff. Everybody else just about left. He's one of the few guys that stayed. He got a lot of credit for work he did last year during the season. He interviewed with Danny Ainge with the Jazz for their head coaching position. It was one of the finalists for that job. And when they hired Will Hardy off of Ime Udoka's staff, they wanted to also hire Joe Mazzulla to be an assistant on Will Hardy's staff, and the Celtics kept him. So they have liked him all the way through. He does have a very calm presence. I thought he acquitted himself pretty well today. He talked about the 2 arrests he had back at West Virginia in 2008 and 2009 when he was in college, and said he's not perfect. He's made mistakes, but he's used those incidents to become a better person as time has gone by. Brad Stevens alluded to the same thing last week when he was asked about the vetting process of hiring Joe Mazzulla in the wake of those incidents. And I think he has a personality that I could see meshing very well with Brad Stevens. He's got a quiet demeanor, confident in himself, said he believes in as much in his ability to do this job as Brad Stevens said last week. But, and all the players like him and I think respect him, but it's a huge challenge that he's taken on. And this is an unprecedented situation in many, many ways. And, the Celtics were a team that had, when I did my survey a few weeks ago, they were seen as having one of the best off seasons in the league. They had their top 8 players come back. They traded for Malcolm Brogdon. They added Danilo Gallinari. They seemed to have depth and they had continuity from last season. They figured things out over the second half of the year. And now all of that's been thrown up in the air and they have to try to figure out how to move forward, not only with an interim head coach, but with Gallinari out for the season and with Robert Williams out for at least the next 3 months with knee surgery. Right. So
we're gonna talk about that in a minute.
Crazy.
Did the players offer any comment on Ime?
Not really.
Support?
Not really. Anything? I mean, Marcus Smart said, they all said some version of it was a very unfortunate situation for everybody involved. Marcus Smart said, it's not like this takes away from what he did last year with the team. Turn their season around, get into the finals. He still has a lot of affection for Ime. But all of them were essentially just in the dark on it. I mean, the common refrain was, we can't really comment on this because we don't know what to comment on. We don't have any information. And I guess I really hadn't thought about what they would say today. I mean, I kind of wondered, but I hadn't really thought about the idea that they wouldn't know anything. And it makes sense. Like, if you're going to have an investigation like this, the whole organization clearly isn't going to know about it. But it just was interesting to hear sort of all of them kind of grasping for how to describe how they felt about it, because it was just an absence of information all the way around. Yeah. And I think it makes an already complex situation that much more complicated for them.
Yeah, I think it makes their preseason, a team like them, preseason is sort of, especially when you're planning on playing into late May, June, preseason is very much of a, for a team in their level, it's just sort of checking the boxes. They can't do that now. Now they have to have a real productive knuckle down focus. And I'm sure their veterans understand that, but it was not the way they were building their mindset up. You know, like the Warriors are about to leave to go to Tokyo. You know, I doubt the Warriors preseason is going to be that teaching intensive. I think they're going to have a good time in Tokyo. Now the Celtics preseason becomes like super duper important. This training camp becomes super duper important, not because I think Mazzulla is going to like install these new systems, but they have to create some sort of rhythm, but they're not going to have Robert Williams, but go ahead.
No, I was going to say was the other thing I thought that was noteworthy from what Mazzulla said, and it's not exactly a surprise, but he made it very clear that he's not coming in and trying to reinvent the wheel here. Like, he was part of the staff that helped turn everything around last year. Other than Will Hardy, all those guys are back. I don't think the Celtics are going to be doing anything drastically different from an in-game standpoint than they did last year. You might see some tweaks here. I mean, obviously, injuries aside, we'll get to that in a minute. But I think short of that, you're
Jalen
Brown.
Jalen Brown's looking at you like, what's
Jalen walks by. I think you're generally going to see things look the same from an on-court standpoint this year as you did last year. But this is a guy who hasn't coached any games in the NBA. It's a whole new situation. It's a bench that is going to have to adjust to that. And it's just a lot for the Celtics to make up for. And that's before we even get to what we're about to talk about now with Robert Williams.
Okay. So they announced last week he had surgery. Initially, it was reported he was going to have a scope and be out 4 to 6 after the surgery. After the press conference, they put out a Friday news dump, so to speak, that he was actually going to be out 8 to 12 weeks.
Well, just to clarify, it's not out 8 to 12 weeks. It's a return to basketball activities in 8 to 12 weeks. That to me would indicate this is not going to be out 8 to 12 weeks and back. That to me is going to indicate you're going to get back on the court in 8 to 12 weeks, and then you're going to have to ramp up from there.
This is the same knee he had surgery on last spring, which he had to come back from to play in the playoffs, which he came back from well, but was hampered. He re-injured it, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, he had surgery on his meniscus the end of March. He came back in 3.5 weeks, and then he played on it during the playoffs, but was up and down, missed 7 games during the playoffs. Some games would look incredible. Some games would look like he could hardly walk on it. And, you know, he made a point of saying today that it was his decision to come back and play. He had absolutely no regrets about it. Got asked about it multiple times. Said, you know, one of my dreams was playing the NBA Finals. I did that at 24 years old. And I'll, you know, you roll with what happens as a result of that. But, you know, back at the end of the regular, at the end of the playoffs, Brad Stevens and Ime Udoka all said he wasn't going to need surgery on that knee. Rest is going to take care of it. He'd be ready to go. And, you know, he obfuscated a little bit today. And eventually I asked him, you know, did what changed between then and now? And he essentially admitted that it didn't feel the way he wanted it to after the time he took off. So they decided to have surgery on it. But two surgeries on the same knee in 7 months is not great, or 6 months. And, you know, again, now he's out for a minimum of 8 to 12 weeks and probably longer. And this is a guy who might've been the defensive player of the year this year. It's a huge thing for them.
Yeah. You know, I'm not an orthopedist, so I can't even begin to hazard. I will say that I guess you could position it by saying, look, if he was going to be playing on a bad knee throughout the year, you're better off having it corrected. Although you wish you would have had it corrected a while ago, but okay. You know, let's say he doesn't get back to basketball for 3 months. Let's say he's out until mid to late January, still plenty of time for the Celtics purposes. But as you said, it's concerning. This guy's a vital, vital part of their team. The difference that they were defensively with him on the court and off in the playoffs was night and day, as anybody who watched the playoffs saw. And it's just, it's really worrisome. You know, their big man position, you know, they traded, not that I thought that Daniel Tice was like a difference maker, but no, he was a guy that could play for them. So their center position is just a lot thinner than it was. I mean, Daniel Tice played minutes in the playoffs last year.
The Celtics didn't have everybody talk to the media today. One of the guys who talked to the media was Luke Kornet, who is now going to play a very significant role for this team. I mean, remember, Al Horford is in his mid-30s. I don't think the Celtics are going to want him playing in back-to-backs. I think they were going to try to limit his minutes as it was, right? So now you have Robert Williams out. You have Al Horford you're trying to limit. Luke Kornet is probably going to play really significant minutes for this team now. And he was treated like that kind of player today at Media Day. So I think that, you know, well, that just sort of underscores where they're at.
You know, for many, many playoff games last year, we would be out on the court doing TV well before the game. You know, 6 o'clock, you know, the games would be at 8. We would be out there at 5:30 doing PTI. We'd be out there at 6 o'clock Sports Center. And Luke Kornet would be out there with the other Celtics players who were not playing, working out. And he looked good in those pickup games. It's kind of like last week I said, hey, Dean Wade looks kind of good in the Cavs pickup game I watched. He got a contract extension. Luke Kornet looked good against the other non-playing players. So,
I mean, the Celtics are excited about him. They're also excited about Sam Hauser, who a lot of fans don't know about, but is a 6'9" wing who can shoot it really well. I mean, I think there's some in the organization, I think, who hope that he can fill the sort of role that Danilo Gallinari was supposed to for them off the bench. They've got a bunch of veteran guys, Noah Vonleh, some other guys who bounce around the league who are in fighting for a couple of their roster spots at the end of the roster who could maybe help a little bit. But look, like I said, a month ago, literally a month ago today, this team was the deepest team in the league, had all 8 guys from last year's finals run back, had added Danilo Gallinari, had added Malcolm Brogdon, had Ime Udoka back, had everything rolling. And a month later, they have a new coach. They have Gallinari out for the year. They have Robert Williams out for probably half the year. And things just look completely different.
Another thing before we talk about the Suns, Jaylen Brown was asked today about the rumors that I don't think the rumors, I mean, I don't think anybody denies it, that he was discussed in a possible trade for Kevin Durant. Now, I dealt with Durant trade discussion here today in Phoenix as well.
And I would half the league, I think.
Probably. Kevin Durant was not traded. So it really doesn't matter who was offered, but that's also not real life. I don't think the Nets were ever going to trade him, quite frankly. So we can talk about offering 35 first round picks and every player and whatever, but that's not real life. Real life was the guy knows that he got offered in a trade or discussed in a trade, whatever the word offers sets people off. So I'll take that back. What did he have to say about that?
I mean, the thing that was most interesting that he said was that, you know, it's sort of been the case for him since he got here. And I think that's referring to the last time his name has come up in trade discussions, whether it was for Anthony Davis or Kawhi Leonard or at other points early in his career, when the idea of him getting traded was talked about then. So, you know, look, I mean, Jaylen has, you know, been here his whole career. He's grown into one of the best two-way wings in the league. Him and Jason Tatum, you know, probably, the second best combination of two-way of wing players in the league behind only Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. I get maybe some people would say Devin Booker and Mikal Bridges. I'd rather have these two guys. I mean, they obviously led this team to the finals last year. I think they've got a chance, even with the Robert Williams injury, I think they've got a chance to be a really good team this year. I think they can go deep in the playoffs still, despite everything that's happened. You know, and Jaylen essentially said, I talked to everybody and that's in the past and I'm here to play basketball. And I think ultimately, I mean, look, the next 2 years are huge for Jaylen Brown. He could be a free agent in 2024. The Celtics are going to be one of the best teams in the league. He's got a chance to make all NBA this year or next year. If he does, he's in line to get a huge payday as a supermax extension eligible player. And the Celtics are obviously hoping and believe they can still win a championship. So, you know, I think there's a ton for him to play for and a ton for the Celtics to do. And I think everybody is ready to do that.
Let's move to my little joyful day here in Phoenix. I have covered Media Day for 20 years. I
have newsflash, Brian is old.
That's right. There's lots of gray coming in here.
Gray in the coif.
I have been to 10 or 12 different teams' Media Days. I have never been to a media day that has had the absolute absence of enthusiasm than was today here in Phoenix.
I think I might have tied you here.
Okay, well that's what I'm saying. Like, but I kind of I didn't think it was they were going to be doing handsprings, but I kind of thought that there might be like a, all right, let's it's Sarver's in the past. Let's focus on the future. But that was absolutely not the case. I could call it that it was like a funeral, but that implies that they're sad that Robert Sarver is gone. I don't necessarily think I would 100% classify it. So let me pivot to saying it felt like a dentist's waiting room. And the players going up to the podium looked like they were about to have teeth pulled. This team has a 64-win team from last year, and 95% of them are back. They are still loaded. They are absolutely a championship contender, and they don't have to worry about Sarver anymore. And it felt like this team was down 3-0 in a playoff series, down 30 points and going into the fourth quarter, game four. Now, today is day one. It doesn't matter how they feel today. It matters how they feel at the start of the season. And I suspect that there will be an attempt by everybody to rally spirits starting when they have a team meeting and dinner tonight. But I cannot even articulate how grim the mood was at this.
And why do you feel that was the case?
So first off, these guys, it sounded like they were all in some level of surprise and or shock about this, what this report said. When James Jones, the general manager, said it, and then Monty Williams said it, I kind of was like, that sounds...
To be clear, said what?
They were shocked at what they read. They were surprised at what was in that report. And I was like, I felt that that was disingenuous, because do they really think that Baxter Holmes completely made that up? Like, they thought there was no chance that, like, if somebody had written that report and that came out about Greg Popovich, I would have been shocked. But coming out about Robert Sarver, based on what you've heard about Robert Sarver, maybe the actual details, maybe the usage of some words, maybe the actual phrases, maybe that was surprising. But, like, we've read about this guy. We've heard stories about this guy, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Baxter's reporting was basically corroborated by the report.
That's right.
I mean, I don't really buy that either.
I felt like they were being disingenuous. Like, they were just saying that they were shocked to sort of satisfy what the expectation was. But Tim, the guys kept saying it. And then Devin Booker comes up there, and I want to get exactly what he said right. And by the way, I thought Devin Booker was the most candid of everybody. I think, everybody was very guarded today, particularly
also the guy that's known Sarver the longest there. I mean, he's been there his whole career. He's been there, you know, since 2014. I mean, that's, you know, he's coming on nine years. It's a long time.
That's right. And, Chris Paul was the most guarded, as you'd expect. Chris Paul was even guarded. You know, somebody asked him, you know, what he wanted to see potentially in a new owner, and he wouldn't even answer that question, because he basically admitted, well, someday I want to be an owner, so I'm not going to, you know, say something that could hurt me, use me later.
Yeah.
But so I think that Devin was the most candid, but he said, it's tough for me because that's not the Robert Sarver that I know. It's not the Robert that welcomes me to Phoenix with open arms. And at the same time, I'm not insensitive to everybody that's involved in the situation. I understand everybody's personal experience with other people is going to be different. I thought the other guys were maybe being disingenuous, but in his case, I felt he was being completely honest with the way he said. And so that made me kind of wonder if I was reading it right. James Jones said, you know, we know I was here when the report came out, the day the report came out, and we were wondering if the players might take some action at that time, like they did with Donald Sterling. The report lacked the kind of visual and audio evidence the Donald Sterling report did. So at the time, the players and the coaches basically said they would wait for the investigation. They said they, you know, there would be due process, and that's reasonable. But at the time, James Jones put out a statement saying, this is not the Robert Sarver that I know. And he reiterated that today, saying that isn't the Robert Sarver that I have known. You know, at the time, I asked Monty Williams about coming to Phoenix when he had the Lakers job sitting there for him. And, you know, I don't think the Lakers offer was quite the same as the Phoenix offer, but I don't think it was just about contract. And he said, no, Robert Sarver played a role in getting him to come here. And so like these guys were like, you know, really, you know, just, you can tell they didn't know how to feel about it. And it was, the mood was dour. The mood was dour. And that wasn't just because of Sarver. DeAndre Ayton, who can be a little quiet at times, but you know, I have known since he has been a rookie. I mean, we're not that close, but I've interviewed him for 5 years now. I know him whenever we speak, not on the podiums and stuff. And he was like, he would barely say six words to any question. There is no question, some scar tissue about the way his contract went down. He basically said, it's all business. I don't want to take any steps backwards. Even when he was asked about Sarver, he gave very short answers. I'm not expecting him to turn handsprings, but there was not a smile for an hour and a half in that room on media day.
Well, when, there's another thing you haven't mentioned either, which I'm sure played a role in that too.
Oh, I got a long list of things that are going on with this organization. But, you know, and I did talk to DeAndre after, and I congratulated him on his contract. And he did smile. And I was like, I'm glad you at least smiled once today. I think he did come in and do some other stuff at media day. I think the guys were in the big room with the cameras. I think they felt a little bit under pressure because they knew their answers were going to be highly watched today.
Sure.
But there's no way you walk away from today thinking that everything's A-okay there. Now, again, that doesn't mean that it can't be. And by the way, these guys have been with each other for weeks now. It's not like they all got together yesterday. They've been at the facility working out. Today they were in their uniforms in front of the cameras for the first time, but it wasn't like they hadn't seen each other all summer. Ayton's been here working out. Monty Williams was like, oh yeah, as soon as I heard about that offer shoot, I knew we were going to match. We're never losing him. And I was like, I mean, I guess you're never going to lose him, but I mean, you basically, you know, he played a hand of poker with him and, you know, he won. So there's some scar tissue with that. There's some scar tissue with the way last season ended with the Game 7 loss to the Mavericks, where they completely got blown out on the court. There was a question asked to Monty Williams about the rumors that there was COVID on the roster at that time. One of the team's assistant coaches did not coach in that game because he had COVID. And Monty Williams said, I can't get into that. It's private medical information. I can't get into that. So it was a denial. That was addressed. What else am I missing, Tim? I got Sarver. I got Ayton's contract. It has to be a thing. Like in this offseason, Devin Booker got extended $224 million. Monty Williams got extended. James Jones got extended. DeAndre Ayton, despite all of it, got $130 million. Not a, to quote Seinfeld, not a ha-ha, not a tee-hee. Nobody asked Monty and James Jones about their contract extensions. And yep. Booker got asked about it like about seven questions in. And
there's also another guy that has been their starting power forward the past 2 years.
I forgot about that. Jay Crowder. Yes. So Jay Crowder is not here.
Yes. Jay Crowder put out a hype video, including you, actually, yeah. Hyping up his quest to leave the Suns. It's an interesting move on a lot of levels.
Well, as far as I can tell, yes, Jay Crowder. I forgot about the whole Jay Crowder thing. Everybody spoke very pro forma about Jay Crowder today. James Jones says, we've had conversations. They're going to remain private. Monty Williams said these things happen in the NBA. Chris Paul says, I always support my teammates.
All things that are true.
Yes. From what I understand, and this has been floating out there, I didn't anticipate he wouldn't come to training camp, but sometime after the season ended, the Suns let Jay Crowder know that his role might be changing for this year, that he was probably not going to start, that Cam Johnson was probably going to start over him or somebody else, maybe not necessarily Cam. Mm-hmm. And that, mm-hmm. you know, his role may not be, you know, he may not be guaranteed to finish games and stuff anymore. And Jay was going in the last year of his contract, wasn't thrilled with that. and said, hey, if there's an accommodation, you can trade me somewhere where I could fit. Let's do that. And so for some period of time, and I think it was, I'll go ahead and say, I think it was months, but certainly weeks, the Suns knew that. And they had talks with teams and they were looking for a Crowder trade. They absolutely talked to the Jazz about Bojan Bogdanović. It wasn't necessarily a Crowder for Bogdanović trade, although it is interesting that the trade that Danny Ainge made, he traded for a former player of his from the Celtics with Kelly Olynyk.
Danny has players he likes, and he goes and tries to acquire players he likes. So he likes Jay Crowder too.
Right. So, but I do think Crowder kind of changed the dynamic of this when he requested to not come to camp, which the team is not sort of blaming him for, but not holding out from camp and not playing is a bit of a change. And now I wonder, like I said, everybody was cordial, but now I wonder whether or not there's going to be a focus on sending Jay someplace where he is a great fit. Now, a lot of teams would be interested in Jay Crowder, especially contenders. He's only 32. He did not play well in the playoffs last year. But the last time I saw the Suns, Bontemps, last time I was with the Suns was in New Orleans. They had just ended that series in six games.
Oh, yes.
The players are wearing the FJ Crowder shirts. Everybody's in a good mood. Chris Paul went like, what was he, 17 of I think it was 16 of 16 that night or something from the field.
Something like that.
Everybody acknowledged the Pelicans had played well. They were moving on. Jay Crowder, everybody was wearing the shirts. Everybody was in good stead. And I was shipped off to Boston, Milwaukee for that series. I come back today. Jay Crowder's like, screw this, you know, I'm out of here. And nobody's got a smile. It's all one giant straight faces of frowns.
Right.
Wow. What a, I mean, that's the NBA. It happens. But even under those parameters, this was something pretty wild.
Well, and the Jay Crowder situation is interesting too, Brian, right? Because like you're correct. He's a guy that every good team will want to have on their team. That also includes the Suns. And the tricky part about this for them is, you know, if you're the Phoenix Suns and you're trading away a good player, and Jay Crowder, even last year's playoffs aside, good player at a viable position, if you're trading him away when you've got a team that's trying to win a championship this year, you got to be getting guys back that can help you win this year. You can't be getting, you know, like Danny Green's out for the season in Memphis. This is a totally hypothetical thing. You can't get Danny Green in a first for Jay Crowder if you're the Suns. Like, you need to get somebody that can play for you right now. And so that is what I think is going to make it a really challenging situation for them to resolve, because like you said, there's definitely going to be interest in Jay Crowder, but is there going to be interest in Jay Crowder with the kind of offer coming back to Phoenix that can give them players that can help them win today? Because there, I don't think there's going to be a lot of interest in some flotsam salary and a pick. Like, I don't think this team is going to make itself worse on the court right, going into this year,
which is why he hasn't been traded yet, because it's not that people don't value him or teams don't want him. It's that the Suns have a certain standard that they're going to need back in a trade. And that's obviously a factor.
And to your point, I do think when the player goes, you know, I don't want to say goes public, because this is, you know, clearly both sides made an arrangement with the Suns putting out a statement last night. But when it gets to this sort of stage and it is public, then there are more things that come into play. More teams get involved. There is more things in the works now probably than before. But, you know, it certainly is going to be interesting to see what happens there, because I don't think it's as simple as you just add this guy, you know, you just go find a trade for this guy and move on tomorrow. Like, it wouldn't shock me if we get to mid-October and we're getting ready for the season, Jay Crowder's still a Sun, and he might even be back playing with them for at least part of the year, if not more. So, you know,
well, that doesn't feel that way right now.
I know, but it's also the NBA. And as you know, these things go in a lot of directions. We were together in New York City when all the Kevin Durant stuff started back on June 30th, you know, and Kyrie before that. I mean, you probably would have made a lot of money at the time predicting both of those guys are going to end up playing for the Brooklyn Nets this season. And here we sit. So,
okay, Bontemps, off you go to Charleston. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you later this week.
Sounds good, buddy.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now joining us from New York, Nick Friedel was at Brooklyn Nets Media Day. Nick, how'd it go?
What a day. I mean, I've walked out with a new best friend. So that's fun.
I heard Kyrie declare that by the, well, what did Kyrie declare to you today?
Well, before I could even get into what I was going to ask him, he was like, you and I, we're going to be best friends before this all said and done. At the end of the season, it's going to be a big hug. And I was like, you know, that's great, Kyrie. That's great. After everything we've been through over the last few months with all the back and forth on the questions that, it was a needed moment of levity in what was a tense at times day, I think, for the entire organization. Forget Kyrie and what he was going through. And there was the layer of the Kevin stuff. And this is the first time that Ben Simmons had talked to the assembled media about where he was at and Sean Marks and Steve Nash. There was just a lot of layers today in Brooklyn, and B, that's how it is with this team. There's always a lot going on a lot of levels.
Okay. So let's start with Durant. It's the first time Durant has talked, we're taking questions, I should say, since his trade demand. I was doing the Suns, so I didn't see it, but I saw some of his quotes. He seemed to be pretty direct. I mean, how would you describe how he addressed the situation?
Yeah, for sure. He said, look, part of the reason that I asked for the deal was because things weren't always great here last year. And he admitted that he had doubts about the direction of the group. He didn't point it in any one direction. He thought that people weren't being held accountable sometimes for what.
Yeah, he kind of referenced Steve Nash on that, didn't he? He kind of referenced Steve Nash on that.
In the moment, I didn't think that. I think he just meant the whole team was going in a lot of different ways. But I can see that if somebody is trying to read between the lines, you can look at it a lot of different
I was just
places.
Reading. I didn't see him say it, so I don't want to. Don't hold me to that.
No, there is when you have a screw up at the level which the Nets did, there's blame everywhere. But what was interesting to me wasn't just that Kevin said, I thought about leaving and that's why I did what I did. It was that I said, are you surprised that you're still here? And he said, no, because the thing I always appreciated about the way Marks and Josiah, the Nets owner, handled everything was that they said, we're not just going to give you up for nothing. We're not just going to give you up to move you. And what that told me as I'm sitting there is you and I spent hours upon hours talking about this through the summer. The Nets didn't like what they were getting back. And for a caliber of player at the level which Kevin is, he knew what his worth was to the rest of the league or what his perceived worth is.
Right. So here's how I would term that. And you shoot this down if you want to feel right. the answer, the reason that the Nets gave Durant for why they didn't trade him is because we couldn't get your value. And it appears that for the time being, Kevin has accepted that answer.
Mm-hmm. I think that also, is a good way to put it.
I also, which means that the Nets in some ways played it well by asking for the sun, the moon, and the stars, and then saying, well, they only offered the sun. The other thing I would say is that he, well, I don't want to go too far with that. I'll wait, but he definitely seemed to be saying he's recommitted, right? He said, I'm committed for these 4 years. I mean, I find it reasonable that he thought he was signing with Kyrie and Harden. And we're going to bring that up in 1 second. But that was not unreasonable for him to say, to say, well, you know, why did you sign for 4 years a year ago and then want out?
My read, having listened to everybody all day, was not that Kevin is now going to be here for 4 years. I think he was saying when he did sign for 4 years, he thought it would be Team A with him, Harden, Kyrie, without the vaccination mandate, and everybody else coming behind him. The weird part, as we're trying to pull takeaways from Media Day, B, is that the Nets, and I wasn't here at last Media Day, but I listened to them every day from January on. It was always championship. We want to win a championship. We believe we have enough, even after the Harden-Simmons deal, we believe we have enough to win a championship. There was no talk about that from really anybody right now. It was more, hey, let's just get on the floor and let's see how we do. And it's been an emotional, rough summer for everybody involved, but let's see what happens here moving forward. And that was really interesting from Kevin on down. It's not that they don't think they can be successful. They absolutely believe that. It's just that this summer was so tumultuous and there are so many questions on so many different levels that everybody's kind of like, all right, let's see how it looks on the floor and let's cross all the different bridges when we get there.
How did Kyrie term the summer? He said the summer was hell. Is that what he said?
I want to be exact. So I would tell you that I don't remember for sure if he said the summer was hell. What the word that definitely popped up was cluster.
Oh, that's right. Oh boy. Now Jackson's got to edit. I'm sorry, Jackson.
It was a cluster. You don't hear that word in general on the record too often, but if we were summing up the Nets summer, I thought that was the perfect terminology.
Well, here's something else that I walked away from. It sounded like, and I'm not 100% certain, but it sounded like what I read was that Durant and Kyrie weren't working together on his contract. And it sounded like Kyrie found out that Kevin had asked for a trade, you know, after he did, like, it didn't sound like they were working together. I don't think they broke apart or ever. I think they always support each other, but it didn't sound like that was, they were, you know, working on the same side in those things.
And that backs up what I was told several times, even in the last couple months, B, which is Kevin and Kyrie are very close. They've got a solid relationship. They are not always as close as it was made out to be publicly. And Kyrie acknowledged, look, I'm always going to be happy for Kevin. I want what's best for him. I want him to be here. But if he wasn't going to be here and that didn't make him happy in his basketball life, then I had to deal with him going somewhere else. So I think the talk in the moment, as we're trying to kind of weave through all that happened dating back to the summer, that Kyrie and Kevin were completely connected and Kevin was upset about Kyrie's contract, that was all way overblown. Kevin felt like he had to do what was best for him. At the beginning of the summer and into the summer, it was getting the hell out of Brooklyn. As things started to calm down a little bit more and he realized out of his own mouth and like the moves that Sean Marks had made, he realized,
all right. He did say that. He said part of the reason he decided to come back was he liked the summer. I've said this several times. I actually thought their summer was good, although I needed a scorecard today. It was like, okay, Joe Harris has been cleared to play. Seth Curry, surgery, hasn't been cleared to play. TJ Warren says he's okay, hasn't been cleared to play. That was, but obviously Royce O'Neal, that trade and bringing back Patty Mills, signing TJ Warren. You know, I did think they had a good summer. That sentiment, I think, was somewhat meaningful.
I think it really was for the short term. The big question that I would have, and anybody who has watched this team since Kyrie came back, frankly, in January, is, okay, everybody's on the same page today, and there is optimism today. But what happens when things start to go sideways, as they always do during an 82-game season? And that's only something that we can know as we watch the events play out. But I can tell you, having sat here, and I'm still here as we speak, the feeling in that room was like when two parents decide they're going to get divorced. The divorce is going to happen. And then they start talking and they say, well, you know what? We want to stick together because we feel like that's in the best interest of our family, that everything has to keep moving forward. But you can't just forget about all the stuff that happened to get
what
you
I
to
think
that
you're,
point.
What you're, I think you're dancing around is the phrase, you're only as faithful as your options.
There you go.
And Kyrie today said he, you know, he didn't have that many options. And
he said he was real close to leaving.
With all due respect, I mean, that's fine, but he didn't leave.
Right.
You know, I think someone asked him, you know, would you have left for the minimum? And he's like, you know, I had options, but he didn't really have options. That's not a realistic option to leave 30, whatever million on the table to go sign for the taxpayer mid-level exception. That's not a real option. He did say something very interesting today that I want to bring up about what choosing to be unvaccinated cost him. What did he say about that?
He said, and this is the first time I can remember him disclosing it publicly, that prior to last season, there was an offer on the table for 4 years, $100+ million. You'd have to imagine the 4-year max at that point. And it was made clear to him, if you get the vaccine, here's the extension. And in his words, it was an ultimatum. Get the vaccine. Here's your extension. Everything's set. By choosing not to get the vaccine, everybody focuses on what happened last season. Kyrie's whole point is that it's not about just last season. It's about that he turned down the guaranteed dollars that he's still looking for right now. And Sean Marks tried to clean it up a little bit a couple hours later and saying it wasn't an ultimatum. It wasn't like we said, here's the deal. But Kyrie couldn't have been much clearer.
Well, I think they were
it.
Like, look, we can't talk about a contract extension until you're playing for the team.
Yeah, exactly. So what Mark said was once the vaccination mandate came down in New York City, the talk stalled completely. And so it was a dance of semantics. Well, did you pull the offer? Was it all about the vaccination? Again, Kyrie said exactly what he meant, which is by doing what he did and not getting the vaccine, he turned down the guarantee that he's now looking for still. So Marks is saying Kyrie's committed. We believe he's going to have a big year. Kyrie, having seen him up and down throughout last season, seemed like he was in really good spirits, and he's confident that the deal will be there when he wants it next summer. But that acknowledgement was really something, because when you're turning down that type of money for making the decision that he made, it just shows you how deep he felt about the choice not to get vaccinated.
Well, to go back, because I was at Nets Media Day last year, when Durant extended, Sean Marks pretty much led to believe that Kyrie and Harden were going to follow. They never got out of the starting blocks with Kyrie, although he could have extended before then. It was a short off season, and he wasn't vaccinated, and that was a growing problem. And James Harden on Media Day last year, he didn't say the words, I'm not going to extend, but he essentially said, I'm not going to extend, both on the podium and in a sit-down interview with Malika Andrews, who was there at the time. And it's been assumed that Harden, it's been assumed by some that Harden didn't extend because of the Kyrie situation. I'm not sure that's true. Harden was leaving himself open to options and also would have earned himself more money by not extending. So, but I have to take a reasonable guess that if Durant extended with the belief that those two guys were going to extend, that at least some conversation was had with Harden. But Harden, you know, on media day, those guys thought that the Kyrie thing would be a short-term issue, that it was going to get solved. Mm-hmm. And yet Harden was still saying he wasn't going to extend. So just for history purposes, and like Harden might have extended this last summer with Brooklyn. So, but before we go, what about what Ben Simmons said today?
He did not say that much, I felt like, in any depth. He obviously was on JJ Redick's podcast last week. He was much more insightful in what he wanted to say. The key takeaway from Simmons was, I'm healthy. I'm ready to start training camp. We can be really dangerous out there on the floor when we're together, meaning himself, Kyrie, and KD. But B, this ties into the whole theme of the Nets right now. They've got to prove it. And Simmons can say whatever he wants about feeling like he's in a good place mentally, physically. He feels like mentally he's done a lot of work on himself. That's all well and good. But the Nets have to do it day after day after day. And Simmons took at least the first step he needed to in this moment to move forward and be a full-time member of the team.
Was there anything said about Steve Nash being Durant asking for Nash to be fired? Did Nash address that at all?
Nash didn't really address it. Marks did to a point, and the answer was, hey, this is the NBA. Crazy stuff happens.
You know what? That's a cop-out answer, but it's also an accurate answer.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, in all honesty, I respect that answer, because what is he going to say?
Exactly. What can he say?
So there was some discussion in the offseason. I can't remember who reported it. I'm sorry. I just can't keep track of all this stuff. That Ben Simmons, you know, left a text message chain or whatever when he wasn't going to play in game 4 of that series. Just to clean that up, he was asked about game 4 today. What did he say about that? That series against the Celtics.
Well, he said it wasn't meant to be, basically.
Didn't he say he like basically couldn't move?
Yeah, I mean, this is what is strange. Again, there's always layers with the Nets. I don't specifically remember him saying he couldn't move, but he just said that he wasn't in the place where he was ready to be out there. And B, this is the issue that Simmons is going to have to alleviate while he goes out there and plays. He wasn't ready physically. The back was an issue. He ended up having surgery. But remember, in that moment, it wasn't just the back. It was, hey, there are mental health concerns as well that he's dealing with. So Simmons came across like a guy who just wants to kind of get on the floor and stop the conversation. But as far as game 4 goes, the Nets obviously never felt like he was in the right place that he needed to be. And moving forward now, they've got to decide, can this guy show us when he is out there that he can be counted on day after day after day? And it's interesting bringing it full circle. Same question that you asked about Kyrie, because the talent for both guys is absolutely there, but you just don't know what's going on with either of them on a regular basis. And then you throw in, of course, the situation with KD and what's happening with him.
More to come from the Nets this season, Nick Friedell. Thank you for joining us, and we will be talking to you soon.
Always, buddy. And get ready for that buddy cop series with Kyrie and I, because it's going to be pretty awesome.
By the end of the season, you don't have to hug until the last day of the season. I those were the rules that he put down. But between now and then, anything goes. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right, now joining us from the Smoothie King Center, the SKC, as they call it down there, is our New Orleans-based NBA writer, Andrew Lopez. Andrew, 1 year ago, we had you on at the end of Media Day. I was in Brooklyn, where no good vibes, just like no good vibes here in Phoenix. And it was quite a scene. How long do they say that Zion was going to be out, not to bring up a bad memory?
Ready for the regular season. Zion Williamson himself said, I will be ready for the start of the regular season for the first official game.
Did he say which regular season?
No, he did not.
So what was today like in New Orleans, specifically with Zion?
It was a much happier day. Zion Williamson was all smiles today. David Griffin was all smiles. It was kind of a funny part. Trajan Langdon, the general manager, went first. We asked him, hey, is there anybody else who is dealing with any injuries who will not be available for training camp in any sort of way? And his first thing was, I'm going to let Griff handle that. Griff was coming up next. Griff, the executive vice president of basketball ops. And we asked Griff the question, and he said, well, Kyra Lewis is still dealing with his ACL. Larry Nance has a calf strain. He may be a day or two behind, but everybody else is fine. And it was a big relief considering the news was dropped on us last year. It wasn't as if we got a release. It was just Griff just dropped it in his press conference. But Zion today was, you know, I know I said it on NBA Today last week that he, you know, looked like he was in the best shape of his NBA career. And I'm going to say, just looking at him walking around today, he looked like he might be in the best shape of his NBA career. He looks good. Larry Nance even joked that he might have to go get one of those suits that you wear if you're doing like police dog training, where you have to have all the different levels on. I think that was where he, where he kind of felt that things were gonna go. So everybody had great things to say, and Zion himself is looking forward to getting back on the floor.
We'll talk about some other stuff with the Pelicans first off, but what was your takeaway from what Zion had to say today?
He seemed a little guarded today, and he kind of knew it was going to be questions about his body and questions about his nutrition and things of that nature. And he answered everything, very well, talked about being at Fort Lauderdale for a few weeks with his team, kind of, prepping for the season. And he said there's a couple of times where, he's talked to Nance and Garrett Temple, CJ McCollum, and obviously people with the Pell staff about, his body. And he mentioned, there's a couple of times that he does some stuff in the gym, and he's like, oh, that's different. I didn't know I could do that. And I think for a guy who, what we have already seen him do, for him to feel like, oh, that feels different, or, oh, this can go somewhere else, I think that's a good sign. He also mentioned, just trying to fit back in with the team now. This team looks a lot different than what it did the last time he took the floor. There's only five players who are on the court or who are on the team the last time he played a game, and that's Jackson Hayes, Kyra Lewis, who will not be, playing to start the season, Billy Hernan Gomez, Najee Marshall, and Brandon Ingram. So everybody else is different. So he's got a little bit of a learning curve. And Willie Green said he's gone back, looked at film from, you know, Zion's previous seasons to see what is going to work. And I think everybody is kind of just focused on a healthy Zion.
So the last time we saw Zion, he was playing like a lot of point forward. That was Stan Van Gundy's sort of brainchild.
Yeah.
And he was good at it. I mean, I'm not so sure he should have played it a lot, but they were kind of leaning into it. They've had a lot of transactions since then, including going out and trading for CJ McCollum. What kind of role do you think he's going to have this year? Are we going to see point Zion?
I think we'll see bits and pieces of point Zion. I don't think we're going to see full on, you know, he's the starting point guard. And I think that was maybe what they thought could have happened going into last season. Remember when they went out and signed Devontae Graham or did the sign and trade for Devontae Graham from Charlotte, a lot of that was we want to want Devontae to be the two next to Z. And since then, Jose Alvarado has kind of shown that he could be a one. You have Devontae who could still be a one. But the biggest thing is you made the trade for CJ McCollum. And despite CJ being a two for most of his career in Portland, all of his career in Portland, I should say, except when he was the backup one, he is now the starting point guard for the New Orleans Pelicans. You're going to look at more than likely, you're looking at a starting lineup, CJ McCollum, Herb Jones, Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, and Jonas Valanciunas. In that lineup, you have really four different guys who can get you into your offense. The one guy that Willie said specifically would be handling the ball more and could be getting him into offensive sets more is Herb Jones. And you basically are now you're just running the other three around and you're trying to get them in certain spots.
I'm not sure. A year ago, I'm not so sure if you'd wanted Herb to dribble.
Right. And Herb, now, don't dribble. On Herb real quick. Last year in summer league, Herb Jones did not start a game for the New Orleans Pelicans. He was brought in as their small ball five to close games. And over the course of what they saw in summer league practices, what they saw in pre-camp workouts, he turned into, you know, a guy worthy of all defensive consideration. So the jump that Herb has made, again, I asked Willie, I was like, hey, Herb Jones was the guy who stuck out last year who can make a jump. Who's your guy this year who could do that? And he goes, yeah, Herb Jones. Again, it's him. It's that guy. So they're expecting big things from Herb. He can do some different things, initiate offense. I think you're going to see CJ is going to be the starting point guard. Jose and Devontae are going to play, you know, backup point. But I think you'll see Brandon handle it at times. I think you'll see a little bit of point C, but I don't think it'll be to the extent of which we saw point Zion last year.
All right, let me ask you two more quick things before we let you go. One, CJ McCollum this week, or I guess last week, got a two-year, $64 million contract extension. It's a lot of money for him, for someone his age, but it wasn't a three-year extension or a four-year extension.
Right.
It, you know, if you listen to this pod, you know that when I evaluate a contract, can it be traded? You know, can it be traded? I'm not sure there would be like people leaping into that right now, but it's not like I don't like recoil as I think if he had gotten a 4-year extension, I might have.
Right.
What did he say today? And, you know, that was a big investment for this team. And I want to ask you specifically about something after you answer that.
CJ said, you know, when he was traded here, we talked about this in February, when CJ was traded to New Orleans, he kind of had some say in where he was just based on his relationship with the Trailblazers organization. And when we asked him about the extension today, which became official today, I think the release is going to come out shortly, but you know, CJ talked about it. Griff confirmed it in his press conference this morning. CJ said this wasn't a mistake in coming to New Orleans. This was, you know, by design. This was something that he thinks, you know, he envisioned himself being here long term. I think it is a small victory for the Pelicans to get him at 264 to add on to his 2 years. I think he's now tied for 4 years, $133 million. It is a decrease in salary for him off of what he's making. So when you go into those years, I think CJ, maybe more than any other player, understands where the cap is going to be in a few years.
He's the head of the players' union.
Yeah, as the head of the players' union. So I think he was trying to lock himself in, and now he's locked in here for 4 years. You have, and I think this is, I know where you're going with this next question. Zion is now locked in for his 5-year deal. Brandon Ingram has 3 years left on his deal. CJ is at 4 years. CJ's at 4133, you know, going into the season. That is a lot of money that you have committed to those three guys right there.
So David Griffin was asked about whether or not the Pelicans would go into the luxury tax. As a background here, the Pelicans and Charlotte Hornets are the only two teams, the old Charlotte Hornets, are the only two teams in the to not go into luxury tax in the history of the tax, which is now 20 years old. Sitting in the audience, I can't say that I can remember an owner sitting in the audience. I'm sure it's happened before, but it is not typical. But sitting in the audience for the press conference in the front row, I believe if I read correctly,
the front row is correct.
Owner, Mrs. Benson, no one, you know, all the Pelicans folks call her Mrs. Benson.
Mr. B and Mrs. B. Now just right. Mrs. B.
The late Mr. B. Gail Benson was sitting in the front row, and obviously that's her decision. So what did Griff say about that?
As the question was still being asked about the luxury tax, or about the committing of the salary to CJ McCollum, Griff quickly looked at Ms. Benson and said, thank you, Mrs. B, for allowing me to spend this money. She just kind of smiled and nodded. And then he kind of goes into this question, which he has said several times before about, look, when it's time to pay the tax, we will pay the tax. We have that commitment from Gail Benson. We have that commitment from the front office. When it is time to, I think in their mind, make the jump to compete for championships and when it's going to be worth it, they're ready to do that. And I think that time is coming. I think that time is, you just look at the money on the books now. You have the CJ contract. You have the Brandon contract. You have Z's money that's going to kick in next year. At some point, as we talked about Herb Jones is going to be looking for money. He's still on, you know, he's only going into his second year off of his second round contract. That he signed last year, but he's going to be looking for money. You have JV locked in. You have Devontae Graham money on the books. You're going to have to pay that tax eventually if you're going to keep this core together or keep the main guys together and try to compete. And I think they are looking to do that soon. I don't know if it'll necessarily be next year when Z's extension kicks in, but they are prepared to do so. And as obviously. Now we'll say this, Gail Benson did not sit there through all of media day. She did not sit through 4.5 hours of interviews.
Even still, she was there.
She was kind of there just for, I don't even know if she was there for Z. I think she was just there for the front office. Just
even still, it was notable that she came and was there for that question.
So,
all right. Thank you, Mr. Lopez. We will be talking to you soon. Have a nice afternoon.
Can I go get food now? Yes, let's go.
All right, well, we're now joined by Dave McMenamin from El Segundo, where he was at the Lakers media day today. If you're watching on YouTube, it's several hours later, and I've changed clothes and location, and our producer Jackson says it looks like I'm in a haunted house. But what do you want me to do? Every light in this hotel room is on, Dave. Dave's outside in beautiful weather. It's 105 here. I'm not going to do it outside. I'm sorry. Not all of us can be in Southern California, Dave. So I haven't seen everything that happened at Lakers media day today, but I did see something that made my eyebrows go up. What was your biggest takeaway from what you saw and heard today?
Yeah, there's a couple that come to mind immediately. You have Anthony Davis claiming he's going to treat this season like he did 2019-2020 when he had something to prove coming after the trade from New Orleans, where he felt like he didn't get a chance to show the world how great of a basketball player he is. Obviously, that season went tremendously for the Lakers to win the championship. It's been doldrums for AD and the team ever since. that stood out to me. Rob Pelinka making a public declaration that he will indeed trade those mythical draft picks at some point
in
order.
Ding.
There we go.
Ding, ding, ding. That's what I was looking at.
Let's go right there.
So describe exactly the statement. I just read it, but describe what Rob said. He said there was a reason why he was saying he was going to do that.
He says that if a player of LeBron James's status is going to commit to us the way he did this offseason by signing that two-year extension to keep him as an LA Laker for at least the next three seasons, that the Lakers organization owes it to LeBron to see him to the end, which was his quote, which means that there is some understanding between LeBron's camp and the Lakers that they will do whatever they can to go all in over these next 3 years in order to field a championship contender. And I actually think that's pretty good news for Lakers fans. Not that I question whether Rob would ultimately do that, but there were so many trades available to them this past offseason. They didn't pull the trigger. I think this kind of keeps the expectations warm on Rob, which I think is a good thing. There should be some urgency to figuring this thing out and getting this roster better, because LeBron's in year 20, and yes, he's been able to stave off Father Time better than any superstar in NBA history, but time is not guaranteed in this league, and you're better to make moves when they're available than hope that a better deal will come up down the pike, in my estimation.
Yeah, that's a good point. So number one, it implies, just to be very clear, he didn't actually say that it was a quid pro quo. LeBron, you extend, we'll trade these picks. But it implies that was part of the reason why LeBron extended, was because he had this equal commitment from the Lakers, which, by the way, would make sense, because otherwise, why would LeBron commit? He wants to be in LA, but why let them off the hook? And so there's your answer. And I appreciate Rob saying that. And I think you're right. I think he was speaking to Laker fans. The second thing is what you just said. This is now the big conundrum. And this seems to now be, to me, what, you know, this is a lot of clarity in what Rob Pelinka has been doing over the last couple of months. He's got this, you know, these two, you know, bullets to fire. And so whether you do them in one deal or whether you do them in two, they're pretty big. They're pretty important. And, you know, you're talking about a 3-year window for LeBron, maybe just to be safe, say a 2-year window, because he's not guaranteed in the third year, but certainly not just this season. So, you know, do you take a deal that moves you from being maybe the 7th best team to being the 5th best team? We've kind of talked about this in the past, but this is what you're saying. You're saying one in the hand versus two in the bush, basically, Dave, to use an old man phrase that I always use.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I love that phrase. First of all, it's not used enough. It's a great, it should be a young man.
There's a bush right behind you. Right. But
yeah, it's a shrubbery of some sort. But we have the idea here that the Lakers can kind of do one of three things, right? You make the move now and go for the Indiana package that we know that those teams have spoken. You say that I did learn all that stuff last year about how Russell Westbrook fits in with this team, but let's just give him a chance with Darvin Ham and see if it possibly works. There's two, and maybe it works well enough for us to not pursue a trade that would require us to move him, and we just add to the roster with some more talent. Or I guess there's four. Three would be you ride out the season with Russ and let his contract expire, and you don't pursue any deals that would be bringing on money beyond this summer, because then you can have your free agency signing as one of your major plays there and hold on to one of your picks. Or like you said, maybe you split up the picks, you know, rather than going for this major two-pick deal to get a clear-cut talent. Because I've been told that, listen, had the Lakers been able to acquire Kyrie Irving, or the Lakers been able to acquire Donovan Mitchell, both those players, the Lakers were willing and able to move both those picks to acquire. The deals available to them, they didn't feel like they could get back a player that's such a difference maker like either of those two.
Right. So that's what he's going to have to evaluate. What did LeBron have to say today? I know he talked a little bit about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's record that he's on pace to break. We used to break down his media day interviews by the syllable, Dave, because there would be like 11 things that happened over the summer that he would have to, like, because he wouldn't give any interviews over the summer. It's not quite like that anymore, but still we did carry his interview live on ESPN. So it's still important, but it's not quite the same as it used to be.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I will say the thing that struck me about LeBron is that it was very much a refreshed attitude that he brought to today. Whatever unharmonious moments that existed last year, he seems to have shed himself of and is coming into this year with a fresh approach. It's year 20. You know, I spoke to him about what that means to him personally and what personal goals he has. And he was very much breaking things down to being process oriented. It's like, I want to get better with this team day by day. And if we do that, we will start figuring out who we are as a unit. And if we figure out who we are with this group of talent, then we'll have a chance to compete. Now, one thing that was interesting to me last summer, you heard Rob Pelinka saying, I'm obsessed with banner number 18 for this franchise. And LeBron James told me he was as obsessed as ever when it comes to, you know, raising up the Larry O'Brien trophy. Well, today LeBron told me he's looking to get back in the playoffs. And Rob Pelinka said, we're looking to compete and be competitive. And I think there's been a course correction within the organization to manage expectations of where they are right now. And, you know, it's one of the best things in life is to be able to exceed other people's expectations. So perhaps that's the route they're going for.
Yeah. I mean, if this Laker team made the playoffs, whether it was through the play-in or outright, it would be a great season with what they've got. I mean, let's just be honest. I don't expect the team to look like this in February, and I expect it to hopefully improve. Russell Westbrook gave an interview to Woj that published Sunday that was quite a departure from the last time we heard from him in the spring, where he torched Frank Vogel, said Vogel basically never gave him a chance, said the communication was poor. His stance was completely different in the interview with Woj. He praised Darvin Ham. He acted like whatever the team needs, I'll do. You know, when his agent, Thad Fauché, his ex-agent now, parted ways with him and put out that statement where he still, one of the more amazing things that happened over the summer, where he basically said, Russ and I are in complete disagreement on where to go with his career right now. It did not give me hope that Russ was eyes were opening into his situation. This interview with Woj gave me hope that he was at least starting to grapple with the reality he's got. What did he say to you guys today?
He said that whatever I'm told, I will do. And he said that he's been able to, from day one, establish a rapport with Darvin Ham, and having that connection is very meaningful to him. And that sounds great. Quite frankly, many people around the league, as I tried to understand Russell Westbrook by talking to former teammates of his, former coaches of his, what's it going to take for him to make this thing work? And a lot of people who like Russ and had Russ's best interests in mind said that part of the reason he was so great is part of the reason he's struggling right now is he's very strong-willed and stubborn. And it was clear that last year's team needed him to do things that he wasn't comfortable with in order to succeed. And thus far, he is talking like someone who is willing to accept these different roles that they'd like him to be able to achieve. Now, talk is cheap. And Darvin Ham, who also praised the relationship he's been able to establish with Russ so far, made it very clear when he said that, yes, Russ has been awesome so far. He's been great in communication with our younger players. And he said he's going to be all about team and all about committing on the defensive end to make us as great as we can be. But if he does not do the things that we've talked about and keep that communication up during the regular season that we've already established, there's a whole lot of other options we have on our team with other directions we can go with personnel in place of Russell Westbrook. So I think it was the right mix of, okay, let's let these guys have a fresh start and turn the page, but let's not pretend that last year didn't happen. And there should be some degree of skepticism that this can actually work out to the best degree, that this utopian ideal that's been presented to us, that Russell Westbrook all of a sudden is a great defender who's going to play a smaller role on offense than rather have the ball in his hands.
Yeah, you're bringing up a fair point. Your point is you got to have buy-in and execution within the role, but it doesn't matter the execution if he's not got the buy-in, and he didn't have the buy-in by his own admission after last season. So he is now on the record very clearly as having bought in. So now it is up to whether he can execute and whether he'll be held accountable for that. Was there anything else today? I mean, I know Kendrick Nunn spoke about his injury that kept him out all of last year. Was there anything else that you think Lakers fans would be interested in hearing about how what you heard from today?
You know, we still don't know what's going to happen with the starting lineup, quite frankly. We don't know if it's going to be Damian Jones or Thomas Bryant. You know, both those guys are capable. I don't believe that it'll be Anthony Davis as a primary starter at center. So, you know, that's something to consider as we move forward. You know, there's some minor injury stuff going on here. Troy Brown's going to miss the start of camp with the back. Lonnie Walker turned his ankle a couple weeks ago. He's still dealing with that. I think probably the biggest news when it comes to their roster is Dennis Schroeder is not with the team. He's still in Germany. Yeah. He's working through some visa issues. It didn't sound like there was anything that has the Lakers too concerned about when he does eventually report. Rob Pelinka said it could be within the week, but considering he was the last guy signed to the roster, so he missed summer workouts with these guys. He wasn't a part of the team mini camp in San Diego, and now we'll miss the start of Darvin Ham's first training camp with the team. You know, that's not an ideal situation for someone who could be relied upon to play a lot of point guard for the team this year.
Yeah. He has been playing though. It's not like you're worried about him being out of shape. He was playing at a high level and playing pretty well. But yes, with the new coach, that is something to worry about. any explanation to the intrigue on why Pelinka and Darvin Ham delayed their press conference by 5 days? They're supposed to talk last ones.
I wish I had something for you there. I still don't have a strong
now, why would they do that?
For what that
now,
would
why
be.
Would they do that? Yeah.
Hey, I just know around the same time that occurred, we were hearing from the Pacers GM that Miles Turner will for sure be with the team to start training camp. So I don't know.
Well, you know, he's been with the team to start training camp. We'll see what happens from there. Going to be an interesting season, Dave. Going to be a very interesting training camp as I watch. By the way, before we go, I know Beverly and Westbrook are hard selling their new buddy cop drama. I think I saw today that did Beverly call Westbrook his best friend or Westbrook call Beverly?
Beverly called Westbrook his best friend and then told me, you know, you guys, the media, you guys have overblown that. And I go, Pat, it's all on tape. I'm not talking about anything off the court. Look at you guys being contentious. And he goes, well, that's just on the court. You know, now that I'm with him as
why
a teammate, you know, come on.
Why are you bringing up old bleep?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, I respect the hustle. Bev's career has been built on hustle.
I mean, if they can be best friends, there's hope for me yet in this world.
All right, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you, Dave, for taking the time on a busy day. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you to everybody who joined us. We'll talk to you on the Hoop Collective later this week.